Wow, Marcus. Possibly the biggest news story of our lives breaking this week.
That's funny. I haven't seen it in the headlines, but it must be a big one.
It's a story about a story.
Okay.
And if the story turns out to be true, then it would be accurate to say the biggest news story of our lives.
Of not only international importance, perhaps intergalactic importance.
Yes. Well, exactly. The biggest story of everybody's lives in the history of the world. I really don't think that we're over-exaggerating to say possibly the biggest story ever in the history of the intergalactic universe. It's you would know this group, Anonymous.
Yes.
Hacktivists, they're called.
Hacktivists, yeah.
Yeah. Group of hackers, do all kinds of tricky stuff on the internet. People might remember them. You might see some protesters flashing up on the TV screen or wearing that Guy Fawkes mask.
Mm.
That's kind of their symbol.
Yep.
You know, because they're anonymous.
And they break the big stories because they hack.
Yeah, they get all the dirt that no one's meant to find out about. They hack into the system and get it all out. And what they have released now is news that, this is what they claim, NASA is, quote, on the verge, unquote, of revealing that they have discovered alien life.
Wow, so there are people out there. Maybe not people. Have they expanded on that? Are we talking organisms? Are we talking bodies, people?
Well, this is potentially where the...
Aliens, sorry.
This is maybe where the story gets a little more mundane, because alien life could refer to anything. Algae often is the one that's thrown up. Like, yeah, we found algae on a planet. That is alien life, technically.
Yeah, it is. It is. But it's not going to invade and shoot laser guns at our brains.
Well,
and
not this year, but who knows what the algae might mutate into.
Take us to your leader. I believe they're in the River Torrens.
The algae heaven there. Anonymous have, you know, done their secret stuff, and this is what they say. A top head of NASA, his name is Thomas Zurbuchen,
mm-hmm.
just to put that on the record, just Zurbuchen. To be credible. Zurbuchen.
Yep.
This is what they claim he told a meeting of the US Science, Space and Technology Committee. Quote, "Our civilization is on the verge of discovering evidence of alien life in the cosmos, taking into account all of the different activities and missions that are searching for alien life. We are on the verge of making one of the most profound, unprecedented discoveries in history." Heady times we're living in.
That sounds bigger than algae. Way bigger than algae.
Well, I'd like you to speculate on what he might be referring to.
I don't know.
This comes after, and this is confirmed fact, a big NASA telescope called the Kepler,
mm-hmm.
is invented by Kepler Wessels, has discovered potentially 219 new planets.
Ooh.
Okay, so these are, you know, things that they've got to confirm it could be a planet. Apparently there's a bit of, you know, some boxes to tick, but potentially could be 219 new of them. And of those 219, 10 are a distance from their sun that would mean water could pool on the surface, which would lend, you know, strength to the suggestion there could be life.
Well, I guess I've been, you know, tongue-in-cheek for most of this segment. It sort of doesn't make sense that there's just one rock in the whole universe that sustains life.
No, it seems unlikely, doesn't it?
So there could be 10 other planets, mm-hmm. with 10 podcasts similar to this one happening right now.
Jeez, I hope none of them are better than ours. I'll be honest with this whole thing. When this has been rolling around for a few days, and as we speak now, you know, this is the latest. Who knows how this story will develop as the week goes on. But after I actually just had a quick think about this and let it sink in for a minute, the significance of this thing, I actually really hope it is only algae.
Why?
Well, what if they had said, okay, everyone, you know, they put on the intercom to the whole world. Excuse me. Just want to let you know.
Yeah.
Just want to let you know we've found aliens. They're pretty pretty serious. and not much we can do, so each man for himself, and we're out.
So this Kepler telescope was so powerful we could see the aliens shaking their fists at us.
Imagine if they saw that, like, oh, these guys look angry. That would be a terrifying moment.
What if they said, though, it'll take them 20 years to get here?
Well, that's no good. Our kids are going to be, like, yeah, true. You know, in the firing line.
Yeah. So you're worried?
Well, I'm fingers crossed for algae.
Okay, okay. One thing I did think of when you mentioned we were going to speak about this today was, why don't we see any more alien sightings in Australia anymore? I remember back in the 80s, there was always, I was driving along the Nullarbor and my car got picked up and flashing lights. And I think it might have something a little bit to do with cameras on phones. So
yes.
If you saw something, you better have your phone.
Yeah. The burden of proof has gone up a lot, you'd say, in recent times. You could get away with just, you know, half-assed yarn in yesteryear. These days, you need to at least have some kind of even, like, grainy film footage. You know, you got to bring something. You can't just get away. No one gets away with just words anymore.
When we're done here, I'm going to Google a story. I'm sure, I feel like it was on the front page of the Tyser of an alien.
Okay.
It can't be that. An alien abduction sighting sort of thing.
Okay.
But I'll Google it. It probably was page 35 of the Messenger. But
how long ago?
It feels like I was quite young, like maybe 10 years old or something. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and they did like an artist's impression of how the alien model.
Yep, just a scroll and
big head, no genitals.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, well, we'll try and find that and we'll get that online.
Tim, last year's census was pretty controversial. It was online for the first time and there was plenty of hiccups, a hacking incident which meant many people were locked out. But eventually, everything was smoothed out and we've finally got some results. What do they show?
Well, firstly, we were all putting our personal info into this website and it was hacked, but everything was okay. And do you know how we know it was okay?
Why?
Because they just said, oh, it's okay. So we assume that that's true. But anyway, that feels like years ago that happened. But now, finally, the results have come out. We now know exactly who is the average Australian.
And who is the average Australian?
The average, or the typical Australian, based on all the statistical data they collected, typical Aussie is a 38-year-old female.
Okay.
So, not us.
No, we're not average. We're special.
We're a minority. typical Aussie, 38-year-old female, born in Australia, as were both her parents. Which is interesting because we also actually know that more than a quarter of all Australian residents are now born overseas. That's on the rise. And this is a first. For the first time ever in the history of Australia, the majority of people born abroad are now from Asia and not Europe.
So stronger Asia focus in Australia.
Yes.
Hmm.
That is correct. So back to our typical Aussie. She also speaks English, which I guess you would assume if she was born in Australia. And both parents are born in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, married with two children. And has completed year 12 or equivalent.
It's all sounding, very pedestrian. And that's why the census, we spend millions of dollars compiling that sort of information.
One
thing, can I just interject?
Oh, please do.
From my experience with women, is probably telling a 38-year-old or 40-year-old woman, because actually the SA stat is the average South Australian is a 40-year-old woman.
Ah.
But pretty similar anyway.
Yeah.
But the average, telling a 38-year-old or a 40-year-old woman that she's average, probably not a good idea. But continue on, sorry.
Yeah, no, maybe don't. just put it that way. now, this is an interesting thing about the typical Aussie. She lives in a 3-bedroom house and has 2 vehicles. Sounds about right.
Yeah. Yep. 3-bedroom. That's pretty stock standard. Couple of cars because she's married.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The 2 cars, I don't know. We could all get by with one car, couldn't we?
Yeah, you've got a one car family.
We're a one car household.
How does that go? Is there any times you go, damn, I wish I had another car?
No. It just means taking a bit of public transport every now and then. That's fine. That's good.
Can we go on with this? It's intriguing. There probably are mainly two car people, I reckon. Two car families.
Yeah, two car does seem to be common. We were two car, but we've, you know.
Have you noticed savings? Have you noticed those sort of benefits?
Oh yeah, we're very rich now. We are loaded.
Go on, sorry.
I am loaded, and you could be too. Just follow my two-step easy process.
I keep interjecting and actually adding nothing to this conversation, so continue on.
No. You've got some interesting info about the typical South Aussie. So it sounds like the women outnumber men is what I'm gathering.
Woohoo!
South Aussies are slightly older than the national average. Any other things?
Apparently, our average wage in SA has only increased by $66 per week. So that's from the period of 2011 to 2016. I can't believe that is true, because when you look at the price squeeze we've seen with electricity bills and other utilities, how families are absorbing these increases, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know how people are running two cars. That's one thing I'll say.
Part of the state stats also are our population is now at 1.7 million for SA. That's a 5% increase, which sounds kind of impressive to me, but apparently our growth rate is nowhere near any of the other states. Victoria smashing us in that respect. We're probably aligned with Tasmania, which, no offense to any Tasmanian listeners, but that's really a dirty comparison most times, isn't it?
Well, it has been. I think Tasmania is coming up in the world very quickly. But unless you have any more South Aussie
particulars,
I'd like to get controversial for a minute.
Okay,
let's get down to the really touchy stuff that we shared about ourselves in this census. Here's the headline: Aussies are ditching religion. Now, we're not meant to talk about religion, but we are ditching it, apparently, is what the census has shown. Number of people who identify as Christian has dropped dramatically since the 1990s. Now, get this. It's over half of Aussies still say they're Christian. So just over 50%. But in 1991, it was 74%.
It's massive. That's massive. So people are saying they're Christian, but they don't actually have a practicing religion, is that?
No. That's I don't know the difference between saying and practicing, but that's just, you know, about half of saying they are now.
Yeah.
74% were saying they were in the 90s. Okay. But there's a boom. There's a boom in some of your second tier religions, shall we call them.
And what are they?
Just in case, we're going to try and offend every possible demographic. Not really.
There was one that was sort of floating around in previous census results, but you go ahead and tell us what they are.
Jedi. Yeah, Jedi is not included in here, so I don't think that's really ranking.
Passé.
Yeah. Here we go. The number of people identifying with other religions has jumped from 2.6% to 8.2%. This catches people who identify with Islam, Buddhism, and Hinduism.
Does that have to do with the increase in Asian people, do you think?
Yeah, immigration could be a big part of that.
What else do you reckon? Why do you reckon that is?
Oh, maybe it's
disillusionment.
Maybe it's just, I don't know, let's try a new thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Let's see what Hinduism is about. I don't know. I could probably be coaxed over into the Hinduism camp. But here we go. The proportion of people who report no religion at all is now almost one third of everyone.
Well,
so I don't know what all this means. These are just the numbers. I'll let you decide.
Yeah, I mean, my experience from attending church over the last few years, you know, the pews are never full. It's probably only the occasional church that's packed to the rafters, but...
How about the local ashrams? How are they...
The local what?
I don't know. It's just the word. I heard. It might be Hindu. What about this same-sex couples? We're going for the real hot-button issues here on the Newsman Web Guy podcast. Australia's seen a massive surge in the number of same-sex couples. 39% surge. So in 2011, it was just over 33,000. Mm-hmm. Now it's over 46,000.
To me, that surge, a lot would be people just coming out and being a lot more public with it. I think...
Yeah, it feels like even from 2011 that that topic is discussed and, you know, talked about in a different way even now than it was even just, what, those 6 years ago.
But I guess that is showing a trend within Australia that people are more accepting and people coming out more to say, yep, we're in this same-sex relationship.
Yep. Now, this one is a bit of a sad one. More Australians than ever are living alone. Maybe it's not sad. That's wrong. I shouldn't have put a bias.
Yeah, one car man. Don't judge.
Yeah, no, so I misspoke. The fact is, more Aussies than ever are living alone.
Okay.
Single occupant households have jumped to a quarter of all Australian homes.
Hmm.
It was one fifth in 1991. And here's something: women are more likely to live alone than men.
Well, these are, yeah, you really need someone to sort of run us through what all this means, I guess.
You don't think we're doing a professional analysis?
Oh, yeah, but I think we're just basing it on our own experience. What do you think that says? Do you think the feeling like you have to stay at home with your parents is starting to lose its appeal, or interest rates being so low, people think, yeah, I'll make the jump and buy my own place and live there by myself?
Well, I'm just interested why it's more women than men that are living alone. Maybe it's just that they're more capable of keeping themselves alive.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe that's part of it.
Financially more responsible, perhaps, and
know what
to do. How to turn on a stove.
I feel like this has been a touchy subject for us to get onto. I think we have probably managed to offend everyone. I'm just checking here to see if there's anyone else we can offend. Do you know our population has gotten bigger? I think maybe you said that. And we're getting older as well. The number of Australians older than 65 has grown by over 600,000 people.
That's a lot of prune eating and grey hair coming up.
Yep. We're getting old.
We're going to be paying a lot of tax.
Who are the young countries? We used to be the up-and-comers, young Aussies.
Well,
now,
what's
as a country, we've hit that midlife.
What's the overall population for Australia? I gave the SA one. But
23.4 million.
Okay. Often, I reckon off the top of my head, I would have thought we were about 20. That was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, I remember it being 17, I'm sure, when I was at school. So it's always stuck as 17 in my mind. That's well outdated now.
Tim, during the week, St. Vinny's, the charity, held its CEO sleepout. Basically, bosses of local companies do it tough for one night, sleeping under a piece of cardboard to raise money and, I guess, get a feeling of being homeless.
Yeah, sleeping out in the rough. I really wanted to do it. I was keen to get involved. And then I remembered I'm not a CEO, so I just couldn't do it. I wasn't allowed.
Yeah, no, that's a fair excuse. Now, normally, to be honest, it sort of slips past for me. I take it in, but I don't really take much notice. But a great show during the week on SBS called Filthy Rich and Homeless. Now, I'm not sure if you know much about it, but basically I think it's about five or six, I would say, people aged between about 20 and 40 who had strong views about homeless people are given the challenge of spending 10 nights on the streets in Melbourne CBD. I've just found it fascinating, Web Guy, to see these people who had very strong views. They were basically saying, if you're homeless, you should be able to, you know, lift yourself off the floor and get a job, get a haircut and get out there. But in reality, it's really tough.
I haven't seen the show. I've heard about it. Seen some ads for it around. So without having seen it, I can guess what happens. We've seen the format before. I don't know if it was SBS. Someone did a show about immigrants.
Yes.
And so if they're following the same format, I'm guessing they take people who are very anti-homeless, put them through the ringer, and then surprise, surprise, by the end of it, they have a whole new opinion on homeless people and much more empathy.
In the space of 24 hours, 48 hours, these people with a big smile on their face, feeling pretty confident and finding the whole walking the streets and grabbing a sleeping bag and sleeping on a park bench or under a tunnel, you can see these people are broken in the space of 2 to 3 days because, number one, one of the things that really stood out, one of the young fellows, it's actually Richard Wilkins' son, who described himself as the It guy of Sydney, or magazines had described him as that.
He looks like Fabio.
Pretty much, and he's got a very weird accent. But anyway, he was going out and asking people for money, and he said within like an hour, he'd only collected $2. It was humiliating for him, number one. It was unsuccessful for him. And to me, it just showed that if you're asking for money on the streets, you're not doing it as a scam. You're really desperate.
So sad to see a Wilkins humiliated on TV. That must have been really difficult to watch. But, I mean, surely no one is thinking that life on the streets is easy. Like, if you're... No one is. I mean, how deluded do you have to be to think those people are just out there for fun, just having a laugh, doing it tough on the streets? The question that I have, and I'd be interested to know whether they touch on this in the show, is how people end up on the streets is more the question to me, because the message we get told is that it could happen to any of us, really, that if a couple of the wrong things happen to us, you know, just random tragic accidents or incidents that could happen to any of us, you know, you too could be homeless. And I don't know, like, it seems unlikely, if I'm brutally honest. Like, do they cover that at all?
Basically, part of the challenge, the first couple of nights they were by themselves. By night three, I think it was, they paired up with some homeless people and spent the night with them. And yeah, they do talk about that. Domestic violence was one of the major factors, mm-hmm. especially for women. Mm-hmm. They don't have anywhere to go. Drugs and bad business decisions. I think one of the guys had a steady job, was doing well, a few bad decisions, things don't quite go your way. And it sounds like it doesn't take too much to go from your everyday person with a house and a job and a wife to nothing, basically.
Scary thought.
A lot of the other part of it was trying to find support and supported accommodation. And I probably felt the same, that if you wanted it enough, you could do it. But the turn back and rejection rate, just because of demand, was overwhelming. For me, it was a bit of a eye-opener in terms of, you sound a lot more compassionate than me. I guess a lot of the times when people ask for me for money, if I get off the train, I'm always thinking, is this a lurk? Is this a thing where they're sort of getting money for drugs? And my other fear is that perhaps if I open my wallet, they're thinking, well, can I have that pineapple in there as well? Mm-hmm. And I'm not that generous, but perhaps I need to show a bit more compassion and really think about what's happening there.
I like what this guy from America, this writer guy, PJ O'Rourke, says, that homeless people come up to him and ask for money, and he thinks, oh, these homeless people, they're just going to spend it on drugs and alcohol. And then he goes, and then I think to myself, hey, I'm just going to spend it on drugs and alcohol.
I guess the other, I've heard this is another scenario, is that you offer to buy someone a meal, which one of the guys that was doing it rough on this SBS show, he went to a food court or a market and someone did offer him like a wrap or something at the end of trading, and he broke down into tears just appreciating that how generous that was.
Yeah, tough times and a tricky subject. And I don't think any harm can be done by, you know, getting a closer feel for what it's like out there. And anything that involves us putting ourselves in the shoes of someone else has to be a good thing. Tricky one to comment on. The whole show gives me an idea for a spin-off, which I just can't get out of my head.
Okay.
And it involves Richard Wilkins' son and just putting him through one trial after another, humiliation after humiliation. Just him by himself.
There were tears on the opening episode from Richard Wilkinson.
I shouldn't be too harsh because I haven't seen it, and he's probably a great, great, great kid. We have a few friends of the show now, Marcus. I think we can say we Adelaide's Angry Pedestrian. We've spoke about a couple of times.
One of our faves. Yep,
he's a favourite. Quickly becoming another friend of the show is our favourite jail escapee, Sean Davidson.
Shawnee.
Mm-hmm. We call him Sean now, just because he's become a friend.
Remind us what he's done and where he is.
Yeah, we take no responsibility for whatever criminal activity he might actually be up to. But last time we checked in with him, he'd just tunneled out of Corrobocan jail with a fork and a bucket. At that stage, we weren't really sure where he was or if he was even still alive. He is now, he's still, I like this, this is a great phrase. Authorities are saying he is still at large.
At large. It's a great saying, isn't it?
You'd love to be at large. And we mentioned last time he'd escaped prison and some funny stuff was going on with his Facebook page. His profile name had suddenly changed, hinting that perhaps he was, you know, accessing it. Update on that, same Facebook account has now been checking in all over the shop, all over the world.
So not just in Asia. He's, 'cause the last we heard from him, he was in Europe, is that correct?
Oh, no. He was still... They didn't even know where he...
Okay.
Had no idea where he was. A few of them escaped. They've captured a couple. A couple are still on the loose. He's one of them. And meanwhile, his Facebook profile has been checking in to locations in the Netherlands, Denmark, Germany, and the UAE. So talk about being at large.
He's pretty young, isn't he? What, mid...
30s, I think he was.
Oh, 30s. So maybe he missed out on the whole Kentucky experience and thinks the time is right.
What better?
I need pressure.
Time?
I need pressure to make that big trip.
It gets a bit murky though, because the theory here is he's not actually at any of those places. This is a ruse to just throw authorities off the scent, just make it difficult to pinpoint where he actually is. There's some reportage online.
Ooh.
Reportage.
That's good.
There's some stories online suggesting he's actually in none of those places, and most likely to be in a notorious Thai resort city I've never heard of, but is apparently the fugitive capital of the world. It's called, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation, Pattaya.
Wow.
Pattaya, something like that. It's apparently where you go if you're on the run.
So it's a bit like Leonardo DiCaprio's Island?
I was thinking of Catch Me If You Can. It's a mixture of a couple of his movies.
Plus that one where they went to Thailand.
That was Thailand, yeah.
But much more dangerous. So just crims hanging out on the beach.
Like bikies and drug dealers.
Shooting guns in the air, Wild West style.
Yep. A lot of like Russian underworld figures there, UK mafia. Like to read about it, the place is just bursting at the seams with just like hardcore criminal bad guys. So they reckon this is probably where he's gone. He's pretty well connected into the mixed martial arts scene. He's done kickboxing lessons and all that sort of stuff, and he's linked to a bikie gang. So most likely hanging out there, they reckon.
I wonder why you're immune to arrest at this special island. People are too frightened to get within 50 metres of it.
Great question. Maybe there's some cash being handed under the table. I don't know. This place is trying to clean up their act. They're trying to clean up their reputation. They've come up with a slogan, and it, genuinely, it's, if I remember rightly, it's bad guys out, good guys in. So they're trying to herd all these guys out, and I think there's been arrests and stuff recently, trying to drive them all out, get the good guys in, turn it into a tourist hotspot. But I've got to be honest, where it stands at the moment, I'm probably not going to visit.